This is IRIB English Radio special coverage.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Congratulations to all our listeners on the anniversary, the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. We now go over to Press TV headquarters here in Tehran for a special program, a special roundtable discussion on the occasion of the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Let's listen in to this special roundtable discussion.
And surprised them, both their politicians and their think tanks. And the revolution in itself, as the late Imam Khomeini said, it exported to the region. So regional countries after the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic groups, the Islamic resistance groups, they came to birth and grow, and the Islamic Revolution actually for the region, but also for other countries like South Africa, managed to be like a path which gives straight forward a way to freedom and independence for a country which for a long time were dependent on the U.S. administrations.
Mr. Mohammadi, in Johannesburg, let's bring the same question to you. Please give us your perspective on the message of the revolution, how it resonates now. The guests and analysts that we've been speaking to here on Press TV believe that the message of the Islamic Revolution is alive and thriving.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamu alaikum to you and to your dear viewers. Yeah, it is very important to bear in mind that this revolution that took place in Iran almost 42 years ago is not something to be sort of national, just to be belonging to Iranians. What makes it sort of international issue, something alive even today, is the message that was there in the movement of Imam al-Khomeini and his people who had this and made this revolution. One more important point to bear in mind is that, you know, this revolution took place at the time that there are no choice unless to be whether with the Russian communism or with the American imperialism and liberalism. There were no other choice. When you look at the world, when you look at Africa, other countries, the countries have to be whether with this or that. So Imam Khomeini and the revolution comes to give the message, there was a message of dignity for Muslims from one side, that it was going to give respect to Muslims. When we look at the, to the time before the revolution, we see that in the Islamic world, anyone who wanted to, the elites, when they wanted to speak about the way of ruling the country, they had no other choice unless to go to one of these schools. And to the extent that even some of them, there are books like in Egypt written as Ishtirakiyatul Islam, they come to say that Islam is the same as socialism. You know, when there is no other choice that whether to be liberal or communist or socialist, so they came to say that Islam is the same as socialism, or some other others came to say that Islam is the same as liberalism. So you see, even if they wanted to give a dignity to themselves, they had to appeal to one of these schools. So the message of this revolution was that we can be and have a kind of system order based on our belief and our values and our Islam, and we don't need to rely on any of these specific schools. From one perspective, for Muslims, I remember in 2010 I was in Indonesia. One of the most outstanding scholars there, Sunni brother, he said that the moment that the revolution took place in Iran, what happened in Indonesia, that there was a feeling of dignity among the people. So, for example, one of the manifestations was that the ladies who were ashamed and embarrassed to wear hijab after the revolution, we could see so many of them wearing hijab, to the extent that the government came and put ban on wearing hijab because they were afraid that there might be a revolution to take place in Indonesia. I want to say that first, it gave a kind of dignity to Islam and to Muslims. Muslims felt that they don't need to appeal to one of these schools to be respected, to be venerated. Another point for the people around the world, especially in oppressed countries, was that the self-confidence. It was very important for a people who had a religious leader to come and believe in the power of the nation and to stand and resist against the pressures coming from the superpowers of the world. So if Iran did that, so the message was that the other nations can do. So from the very moment that the revolution was victorious in Iran, they did their best not to let this message reach people. By this propaganda machine that they had, they began a systematic propaganda in the Muslim world and also in the Western world in order to disgrace the image and to deform the true message and image of Iran and the revolution that took place and the message that it was carrying for people, the oppressed people who were deprived in a country like South Africa, that they have felt the oppression and the discrimination by their souls and by their hearts. So the message was very clear, but they didn't let the message to come. And now when people are hearing this message, we see that this is what they needed and what they need. And even today, we see that after the collapse of the Soviets and the world becoming sort of monolateral under the hegemony of America and liberalism of America, today the need for such message of the revolution is more even than before. And it is felt that what liberalism is going to do to people when it comes to freedom, you know, they claim that they are going to give freedom to people, but it's a specific term, what they call it, what they are giving to people, what they claim to give to people is negative freedom. While the message of the revolution was positive freedom, they used to, and they are the propagating and adhering freedom of, but what, and freedom from, but what the revolution of Imam Khomeini and the revolution of Iran was to give to people and to advocate was the freedom to, freedom for a reason. So this is a positive freedom, they call it in politics, that is going to remove the shackles and the chains from your mind. There is a saying for Malcolm X. Malcolm X used to say that, he says, I miss the time that we were slaves. He says, the moment that we were slaves, the chains and the shackles were on our hands and our own feet, and we saw them and we knew that we were slaves. But today, they have removed those chains, but the chains are on our brain.
Okay.
We don't see.
Sure, let's cross over to Mr. Firas Ali once again in Malmo. Let's talk about an issue that we were focusing on earlier, and that's the issue of scientific breakthroughs and advancements. And how important is it that the Islamic Republic, given all the sanctions and all the foreign pressure, the foreign Western pressure spearheaded by the United States, has managed to make these significant scientific breakthroughs and has also reached a level of self-sufficiency when it comes to the defense and missile sector?
Well, the sanctions could actually be a form of blessing for Iran, because the hostility from the United States of America started from day one of the revolution, when the Islamic Revolution came into place in Iran and the Islamic Republic was built up upon it. They started, firstly, they came with the Operation Eagle Claw, the Tabas operation, which failed. And after that, they imposed 8-year war on Iran and then sanctions. But regardless of that, as you say, Iran has managed to become a beacon of scientific progress in the region. And it has, as your guest said, become a role model for other Muslims to follow and implement. Recently, we see one of the recent scientific progress that Iran has made was the case with the corona vaccine. The coronavirus hit the world very hard, and all country and nations was affected by it. They tried to find a vaccine for it, and they needed test kit and so on, and the U.S. sanctions didn't allow Iran to buy it or import it to Iran, which turned the table. Instead of being a a burden for Iran. Iran used the situation, and Iranian scientists and youth brought forward test kits, ventilators, and so on. And now Iran, alhamdulillah, is managing to produce 3 or 4 vaccines for the corona, which will start soon, hopefully. And so everything the United States has done through the sanctions has actually backfired. It has been to the benefit of Iran. It has made Iran greater, and the Islamic Republic have grown because of the sanctions that was miscalculated from the beginning.
Mr. Mohammadi, your thoughts on the same issue, the issue of self-sufficiency and indigenous innovations that the Islamic Republic has conjured following the Islamic Revolution and all the countless U.S. sanctions?
As my brother said, in fact, this was a big mistake from the side of the United States to put all the sanctions at once on Iran. You know, if they wanted to play, as they say in politics, to play wise, they shouldn't use all the cards at once. And they did so. They put all the sanctions, even to the extent that they put sanctions on the shrine of Imam Reza alayhi salam. So this is beyond imagination that to what extent there is hostility and they are afraid. And because mentally speaking, they feel that they are at the edge of the collapse, really, the liberalism. And the mentality and thinking is that if we want to stay in our place in where we are, because if the liberalism is to fall, then the other alternatives will come to the surface. So they say if we destroy any alternative for liberalism, then we can stay in where we are. So with this mentality, they want to destroy any possible resistance in the region. So resistance is very important. If resistance is going to be successful, then they have nothing to do. If the Arab countries come to themselves to believe that they can be on their own and they can be a Muslim united nation, if without the oil of these Muslim countries, as the American economists, they themselves, they declare and they confess that without the oil, without petrodollar, America is nothing. So by this mentality, they came to put all the sanctions on Iran to bring Iran on the knees. But alhamdulillah, Iranians, with self-confidence and relying on Allah and believing in the capacity and potentialities that they had and the struggles that they had, this defense system, the missiles that Iranians created and invented, the defense system that doesn't let them to think of any kind of transgress to Iranian borders. So these sanctions made Iranians, you know, there was worries inside Iran that once oil will be, we will run out of oil and it will finish. So we had to do something. But there was some maybe postponing to another time to think about another sources for economy. By these sanctions that they put on everything in Iran, especially selling oil, now it's helped Iran, and in fact they forced Iran to come to this level that to make to bring alternative to the economic sources, not to rely only on oil. And now Iranians are changing and bringing multiple different sources into the economy, and this will make for a while there might be some difficulties, but at the end it will make the economy strong and it will have the fruits for the economy. So Iran will be economically so strong that the way that alhamdulillah today is by the military strength, the economy will be so strong that the sanctions will have no more effect on the economy either in the future.
Mr. Farah Saibi, let's talk about some of the enmity that the United States holds towards Iran. Why is there such a level of hostility towards the Islamic Republic? A top Iranian commander said that the Islamic Revolution, in fact, dealt maximum defeat to not just the United States, but Israeli regime's regional goals. Do you see it in that light as well?
Yes, of course. We have to remember, before the revolution, Iran was an American hub in the region. You had more than 40,000 American guests, if we say so, on Iranian soil, and Israel has had an open embassy in Iran, so they needed Iran, and they used Iran against the Arab countries, those in the region. But with the Islamic Republic, with the Islamic Revolution, actually, Imam Khomeini came and gave a third way. Instead of liberal West or communist East, they come an Islamic Republic. And from day one, the revolution and the republic has never bowed down to U.S. pressure. United States is acting like a bully in schools. If you don't, either my way or the highway. And when the Islamic Revolution came to place, Iran started to supporting the oppressed nation in Palestine. They gave them hopes. I mean, look, the Palestinians, once upon a time, they fought Israel with stones. Now they're sending missiles over Israel, which the latest war, I think it was only Israel only managed to defend themselves during 8 days, and then they went to a ceasefire. The same goes for the oppressed Lebanese people and the Iraqis, Afghanis, and so on. So as your guest earlier said, one of the problem with Iran for the United States is that Iran didn't only manage a revolution for itself. It even became a role model for the region, which are starting to oppose the existence of U.S. troops and management, economy, everything in the region. And after the assassination of the commanders, Abu Mahdi and Shahid Sardar, Iran made it the point for the resistance front that this will be the start of the end of U.S. presence in the region. And that's why the United States of America can't accept that. They're not used to that. They're used to have backward leaders like those in the region who just bow down, regardless of what they say. Even if they humiliate them on TV like Trump did with the Arab leaders, they don't care. They don't mention a word. They just bow down and accept the presence of the United States. This is something that the Islamic Republic has not done from day one, not 40 years later. From day one, after the revolution, during the hard war, the standpoint was the same. We will not bow down to U.S. pressure. We are an independent country, and that's something the United States can't handle.
Is that so, Mr. Mohammadi? The United States, it has this hostility towards Iran because of its independence. There are also other theories that some of our guests have given us, one being the fact that Iran is a major player in the region, and its growing influence in the region is, for lack of a better word, it's rubbing the U.S. the wrong way. And also there's the other issue that the United States dances to the tune of the Israelis.
Yeah, these points are very correct. And besides, we can say that, Quran says what there was a tactic for Pharaoh and for the arrogant rebels in order to make people follow them. Quran says in Surah Az-Zukhruf, verse 54, Quran says, فَاسْتَخَفْتَ قَوْمَهُ فَأَتَاؤُهُ. Pharaoh used to demoralize people, disgrace people, then people worship him. This is the very tactic that it is used today. You know, they have to demoralize people. They have to make people frightened. They have to make the world to not to dare to raise against America. I remember in 2016, I was in South Korea, and there were these American tanks coming and going and kind of frightening people in the streets. I asked the friends who were there, doesn't it bother you that these people are coming sort of disrespect to you? They said, we cannot do anything. This is how they are. They are powerful. So see, this demoralizing the nations to feel that Americans are powerful and we cannot do anything to them because they are the masters of the, they are the bullies, as our brother said. They are the masters of the world and we cannot do anything. This is the same in Japan. And this is the same in many countries that Americans are present there. So it is very important to not to let any country to be successfully stand against America. They have to give this message to people in the world, around the world, that nobody can stand and resist against us. So Iran is the role model for resistance against America to stand on our foot. So they are afraid of this. They shouldn't let the world see success in Iran. And for them, it is very important to bring Iran on the knees. But alhamdulillah, Iran has resisted and gives this message to them that we can be on our own and we will not let you to reach to what you are. So one point is that by putting pressure on Iran and this hostility, they are going to, in fact, demoralize Iranians and other people from any kind of thinking of going against the American will. The other point is that, this is the, as my brother said, the interest of Israel. I remember in the, at the beginning of when the fire was switched to Syria at the time of the advent of the Arab Spring, when what happened, I had a meeting with the Italian ambassador to Iraq, and that time he said that they are going to divide Syria into three countries. One part will go to Syria, to Israel, one side will be for the Kurds, and the other will join the side of Turkey, and there will be a corridors inside. I said it will not happen. They said, no, this has been determined by the West, by America and the Europeans, and it will be done. So you see, Iran and Russia and the resistance in fact, Syria, they didn't let this happen. So they are so angry that Iran helped Syria not to let the politics and in fact, the dreams of Israel to come true. And they are angry with these things. They know that Iran is strong in the region, and they very well know that Iran is not to conquer lands. Iran is not to occupy any land. Iran was a friend in the region and is a friend in the region. Kuwaitis, you know, when Saddam Hussein decided, of course, by the support of some Arab countries and the green light from the side of the U.S. to attack Iran, Kuwaitis helped Saddam Hussein a lot. Some billions of dollars came by their side. But after the war, and when Saddam Hussein began attacking Kuwait, and when they received the help and the aid from Iran's side, they came to understand that they were mistaken about Iran. When they are very in trouble, they sense the friendly, tendency from Iran's side. Unfortunately,
sure.
Today they don't let this feeling of friendship to come from Iran's side, and they are just by this causing anxiety okay. in the region. They want to have their own goals.
Unfortunately, we're short of time. I'm sorry to jump in there. Thanks to Mr. Murtaza Al-Mohammadi, Islamic scholar and researcher in strategic studies, joining us from Johannesburg. Also, thanks to our guest in Malmo, Sweden, political commentator Feroz Ali. Iranians have celebrated the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. People in different cities and towns turned
out. This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, where you've just listened to a special roundtable discussion on the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The two guests were Feroz Ali, political commentator from Malmo, Sweden, and Murtaza Al-Mohammadi, an Islamic scholar from Johannesburg, South Africa. Our guests, a quick recap of the roundtable discussion. Our guests mentioned that U.S. sanctions have essentially backfired. Iran has gone from strength to strength after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Iran is an independent country, a role model for other countries to follow in this region, and this is something that the Americans cannot accept, they cannot swallow. It is seen as a real threat to U.S. interests. Iran is a real stalwart in the region, a key country in the Islamic resistance front, and one of the main obstacles to U.S. designs and schemes in this region. Well, we shall bring you other special programs throughout this day. Wednesday, 10th of February, 2021, the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Do stay with us, but we now go back to our regular programming. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Inside Israel. The social crisis in Israel has become big, so big that it's now a national security threat. This is according to the annual strategic assessment of Israel, published by the National Security Research Institute at Tel Aviv University.
Well, we're coordinating with the leaders of the different cities, and we're making sure that we're in close contact. But, of course, we know there is a lot of tension due to the recent cabinet decisions, and a lot of people, especially in the religious cities such as, for example, Bnei Brak. As we saw yesterday, there were protests, and there are possibly protests that might take place also this evening. So that is something that we're definitely ready to deal with if necessary. But, of course, the main aim will be to implement a full closure in all of the red zones, red cities.
The internal crisis in Israel now tops the third top post in the short list of national security threats facing Israel for the first time ever. In fact, it made the top list as the third most haunting issue for Israel, with Iran being on top place. This is the first time in Israel's history, apparently, that the social crisis there has been considered such a threat by the regime. It seems that things are only about to get worse there, too. According to the Institute, the internal crisis is represented by the instability of governance. The move to the fourth elections within 2 years would undermine the broad foundations of national security, the report added. The report also says that the crisis is a threat to Israel's national immunity. The report specifically cites the ongoing protests and the rise of violence and increase in bipartisan and divisions in Israeli politics that has reflected in society. The crisis, the report warns, will also lead to a weakening of regime agencies and institutions through difficulties in performance and obstruction of decision-making procedures. There is also a significant decrease in public confidence in institutions and the absence of solidarity and a common goal among the segments of Israeli society. The Institute believed that society is torn between health, economic, social, political, and governance crises simultaneously revealed during the corona epidemic. Keyword here, revealed. It turns out that these issues have always lingered in Israel, but were never addressed. The current crisis comes in light of the spread of the coronavirus as a result of the population's non-compliance with the instructions of the Ministry of Health and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It also comes after some officials failed to adhere to instructions such as total closure on the population. And when officials did finally adhere to the regime's rules, health officials said it was too late.
The decline in trust in institutions has two reasons. One is a long-range effect, and one is the short-term, which relates to the corona. The long-term is the attack on institutions, mainly by Netanyahu, over the last few years. The courts, the attorney general, the police, etc. The people who work, the civil servants who work at the Ministry of Finance. So the gatekeepers, I mean, if you attack these people and these attacks, look what happened in America with Trump attacking the media. Everybody is leftist. Everybody is subversive. So you can see the results in the decline of trust, and in the short term relates to the corona. The management of the corona crisis is pretty poor, and just look at so many people, both on the ultra-Orthodox communities and the Arab communities, who just defy the orders of the government. So all in all, the long term and the short term have a strong impact on the decline of trust in institutions. I think the statement by the INSS that the internal divisions and feuds are a national security and actually a national crisis is correct. We can deal with any external threat, and we've shown over the decades that whenever we are attacked, we get together and we prevail. If we are divided like this and we lose trust in the institutions, and we are getting into the fourth elections in 2 years. No wonder people lose trust, and when they lose trust, this is very dangerous. So I agree, this is a great, great danger to Israel, the internal crisis, the internal feud. First of all, there's the old division between secular Jews or non-Orthodox Jews and Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel. This has a long history of there's a community that pay less taxes. They don't study the core issues like math and English, etc., which are necessary to modern world. Many of the men don't work, and they don't serve in the army like all of us. I served, my children served, and my granddaughter now is in the army. So to look at a community that doesn't take part in the national effort is very infuriating. Come the corona, and you see these people defying the orders of the Minister of Health, and they are getting infected. I think the Israelis would have accepted anything if they had leadership who would tell them, you know what, everybody has to now to pay something. People who can, people who make a lot of money should have paid, should have been taxed, to help others survive this. But you need leadership for this.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. On Twitter, Shimon says, an economic and social crisis in Israel. No services for welfare for 2 weeks. Leo says, Israel starting war to cover the economic and social crisis in Israel. Thousands of Israelis renewed weekly demonstrations against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, calling for the long-serving Prime Minister to resign over corruption charges against him and his alleged mishandling of the coronavirus crisis.
Israeli public, it has no belief in its officials, in its government, in all the how do you call it, the government offices. There's no belief in them, in none belief. The police is enforced is using extra power for on children, on elderly, on just people that are in the streets. On one hand, and on the other hand, other people do whatever they want. Nobody believes anybody anymore. So people don't trust anybody. They don't trust the opposition. They trust the government. And the thing is, why the people went down to the streets is because the disbelief. And what a lot of people, not all of them, but a lot of people are saying, we do not want to go back to, it's in Hebrew, it's called the old good state of Israel. We do not want to go there because it wasn't good for a lot of us. It wasn't good for the Palestinians. It wasn't good for the Mizrahim, it wasn't good for the Ethiopians, it wasn't good for a lot of people, basically. It wasn't good for the poor. So basically, I think people are saying, we want something that is completely new. We don't trust any of the politicians that are changing parties from, you know, they've been in this party and now they want to go in this party and now they're separating and they're combining. Most of the public does not believe the public figures in Israel almost anymore. There's no trust.
The effects of the political and economic crises and the strength of their negative effects largely stem from the way they were managed. Israelis blame the regime for the mismanagement of the coronavirus crisis. Opinion polls have recently showed the existence of a loss of confidence in the regime, Israel's leaders, and institutions. This loss of confidence has negatively affected the Israeli population's readiness to implement anything the regime tells it. Businesses, including restaurants, have failed to adhere to lockdown procedures. The poll also shows that most Israelis support the continuation of the demonstrations and protests. This even in the backdrop of their deteriorating economic and social conditions. This is, of course, a huge threat to the Israeli regime. The demands of the protesters have begun with the downfall of Netanyahu, but these protesters have went on to ask for the dissolution of the cabinet and Knesset and a fourth election. In December, their demands are met. Now, with a fourth election set for March, the weekly anti-regime protests still continue with more people joining. A recent survey by the Israel Democracy Institute showed that 83% of Israelis believe that there is no social solidarity there. According to this poll, 74% of Israelis say that they do not trust parliament, that is the Knesset, and cannot rely on it in the face of the pandemic. 70% do not trust the cabinet, 63% of them do not trust finance ministry officials, 51% of them do not trust the police, and 47% do not trust the Ministry of Health.
Is not a politician. A statesman thinks about the future of the country and what's good for the country. The politician thinks about the next election and what's good for him. And what we see today, we have politicians. We don't have the statesmen. We don't have the people who give us a vision. Just think about the Israelis today, they don't have hope. There's nobody they believe in who can speak to them and tell them the truth. If it's hard, Israelis know to go through hardships, but they need leaders, statesmen, to believe in. And we don't have these people right now. So let's see what happens in the next elections. I believe I look at the protest, the hundreds of thousands of Israel taken to the streets, and there are some people who are doing it for week after week, you know, in the cold weather, rain or shine. And I know many of the young people who go through the process, and I see a lot of potential there. So, and also I'm a sworn optimist, so I believe that we will see a new generation of people emerging out of this crisis and taking over. I think Israelis want a direction. Israelis are willing to go through a lot of hardships, but show us where we are going. If you look at, the handling of the current corona crisis, the businesses are closing down. People are laid off. I don't know if when the corona goes away, they will find any job anymore. And in the meantime, our leaders throwing money like from the helicopter on everybody, people who need it, people who don't need it, with no any plan of how we make a crisis into an opportunity. For example, strengthen the public health system. The reason why we survived this crisis is because we have Kupot Cholim, we have the public health organization, which are so strong and so accessible to the public. Look at the vaccination, how well it goes, because we have all those organizations which have been shrinking over the years because of lack of funds. And suddenly we have so much money to throw on everybody instead of investing in the public health system.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Sir Distick on Twitter says the commission found reasonable grounds to believe that individual members of the Israeli security forces, in the course of their response to the demonstrations, killed and injured civilians who were neither directly participating in hostilities nor posing an imminent threat. Yehi asks, what about the demonstrations against Bibi, the ones going on for months all through this pandemic? Jankowski says thousands of Israelis renewed their weekly demonstrations in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, asking him to step down as Tel Aviv went into third COVID-19 lockdown. Since last year, Israel has been witnessing demonstrations everywhere.
It's a mistake to think that the public was out in the streets only to demand only to demand that the government will be dispersed. And it was a mistake, and there's also a mistake. A lot of people think that the demand is to interrogate all kinds of things, like the selling of the submarines or the buying of the submarines also to Egypt or to ever. I'm not too involved in that issue. I think a lot of the public, some of the public is out there saying we want a government that is not corrupt. But a lot of people are out in the streets, or a lot of people are not out in the streets, but basically they feel that they do not want to go back to business as usual. They do not want any government. And also, there's something I didn't mention, because on the last elections, one of the Kahol Levan party received a lot of voices. They received a lot of people voted for them, and the hope was that they would send Netanyahu to trial or to, you know, or home, basically. And they sold the public. They went into coalition with the Netanyahu government. So people don't trust anybody. They don't trust the opposition. They trust the government. People feel that the vaccinations, a lot of people are happy to take them, but a lot of people feel that the vaccinations, the fact that Israel is, has been receiving so many vaccinations, people feel that Israel is like, is the government is allowing people to be, the companies to do experiments on people here in Israel. So basically, the sense of disbelief is tremendous all over. And actually, when you look at the what's happening around in Israel, you see the Palestinians for 48, talking Umm al-Fahim and cities within Israel. It's an uprise now. They're in the streets. There's police. Children of 14 years old are being arrested violently. You have these collisions with the Nebak, with the Orthodox cities. You have it almost everywhere. Israel is extremely in unrest all around. There's nothing, you know, we've been out in the streets for 30 weeks now in Balfour in Jerusalem, but not only there. So basically, there's a big the society is in a situation of unrest. And also people feel that the fact that they were going to elections in the fourth time in 2 years, it's the feeling that there's no government. There's no head of police. There's all kinds of positions that are not occupied because the government, Netanyahu, is not, the government isn't functioning.
Israel has lost control of coronavirus for several reasons, the annual strategic assessment of Israel said. The most important of which is the loss of internal political stability and the failure of the Israelis to respond to the instructions of their regime. To this day, much of the Israeli public believes the coronavirus is a natural disaster, mainly due to their distrust of the regime. But it is important to note that these issues only shed light on underlying crises that have been ignored. Now, the social problem is a national and strategic security threat for Israel, one that has shaken the highest echelons of the regime. Here are the news making the press in Israel. Ynet News, cash-strapped public hospitals pull plug on emergency admissions. 6 medical centers across Israel said that they will receive only COVID patients and those in life-threatening conditions over finance ministry failure to provide more assistance despite surge in new coronavirus cases. Some 200 doctors, nurses, and medical staff from 7 public hospitals protested outside the finance ministry's offices in occupied Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Haaretz. Hundreds of members of the ultra-Orthodox community have protested in Beni Brak against police enforcement of coronavirus restrictions. A 41-year-old bus driver was hurt after being attacked with pepper spray by protesters, who proceeded to set the bus on fire. According to witnesses, the attackers shouted, "He's an Arab." Times of Israel. Clashes broke out in 3 cities across Israel as police attempted to enforce coronavirus lockdown restrictions in a number of ultra-Orthodox communities. In the occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood of Mia Shirim, hundreds of people clashed with police attempting to shut down a yeshiva, a religious school that had opened illegally. The Jerusalem Post. A Swiss criminal court found Israeli businessman Benny Steinmetz guilty of corruption and sentenced him to 5 years in jail, delivering a landmark verdict in one of the mining world's most high-profile legal disputes.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.